Chris Boyd. Up next on Think, there may be liquid water on Mars, not just in the past, but right now. We'll spend this hour with Steve Clifford of the Planetary Science Institute talking about how a European Mars orbiter discovered what appears to be an underground lake of slushy water at the red planet's southern polar ice cap. Scientists have known for some time that there is ice on Mars, but unfrozen water, if it's really there, that's another thing entirely. We'll learn why this is such a big deal and talk about how researchers might determine whether living things could survive in that water. Our conversation starts after a short break. Some pretty stunning news last week. It seems there is water on Mars. Not ice, which we've known about for some time, but a liquid lake sitting underneath a frozen shell at the red planet's southern polar cap. If further exploration confirms that report, it's a big deal. Some scientists think if there is one lake on Mars, there could be many. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Steve Clifford is a senior scientist at the Planetary Science Institute. He specializes in the study of water on Mars. So we've invited him on to help us make sense of this announcement and its significance. He joins us from the studios of Houston Public Media. Steve, welcome to Think.
Hello. It's a pleasure.
Will you start by telling us a little about the data and technologies that you have relied on to study water on Mars throughout your career?
Well, some of it's come from the imaging data, from the photos that we've gotten from Mars. But the one that I think is the most relevant to this discovery of a lake is the use of radar. Images can tell you a lot about the nature of the surface and evidence for the past existence of water, the action of transient occurrences of water. But in terms of where we think persistent water resides on Mars, we think it's most likely found in the deep subsurface, perhaps as much as several kilometers below most of the planet. But in this one location, there is radar evidence obtained by the MARSIS radar instrument that flew on the European Space Agency's Mars Express orbiter of potential long-lived reservoir of liquid water beneath the South Polar Cap.
MARSIS stands for Mars Advanced Radar for Subsurface and Ionosphere Sounding. What does that mean exactly? How does it work?
Well, what this instrument does is it sends a pulse of radar waves to the subsurface. Radar waves are at a frequency where they can penetrate the surface and tell us something about the nature of what lies beneath. For those who are familiar with radio, this is a frequency of about 1 to 5 megahertz, which has a wavelength of about 100 meters. So these are very, very long, basically radio waves. And they act by having this ability to penetrate the ground to great depth. And they're reflected off of different structures that might be present in the subsurface, as well as by differences in the electromagnetic properties of materials in the subsurface. And one of the strongest differences is the difference in electromagnetic properties between ice and liquid water. In the Antarctic on Earth, radar has been used to identify the presence of up to 400 lakes at the base of the ice sheet, which we believe are connected by subglacial channels, so that water that's melted off the base of Antarctica works its way into these subglacial lakes and eventually out to the surrounding ocean. On Mars, so far we've identified this one location where there may be liquid water that exists at a depth of about a mile under the surface. And there is at least circumstantial evidence of other bright reflectors at the base of the South Polar Cap that may be related to the presence of liquid water as well.
So if I'm understanding this right, the radar comes back with a different echo where there may be water under the icy surface.
Right. The stronger the difference in the electromagnetic properties of materials within the ice or within the subsurface, the stronger the reflection that we get from that particular area. Again, the brightest reflections we get when we do radar soundings of Antarctica come from the presence of liquid water. And the radar team for MARSIS on this European Space Agency mission that's still in orbit around Mars, it arrived back in 2003-2004. MARSIS began to acquire data about the nature of the subsurface in 2005. They have identified several very bright, radar-bright areas at the base of the cap, and going through all the possible scenarios that might give them this kind of bright radar return, the most probable explanation they've determined appears to be liquid water.
What was your personal reaction when you first heard this?
Well, I was quite excited. this is basically an idea that I had explored back in the early 1980s as a graduate student at the University of Massachusetts, and then ultimately published in a paper in 1987 in the Journal of Geophysical Research. And it was all about the idea that the thickness of the Martian polar ice caps might be great enough, and the radiation of internal heat by the planet, geothermal heat flux of the planet, might be great enough that melting occurred at the base of the Martian polar ice sheets. And that has great significance for understanding the climatic and hydrologic cycling of water over billions of years, and also the possible survival of native Martian life to the present day.
Does Mars still have geologic activity?
Yes. On a planetary time scale of billions of years, Mars has been around for about 4.5 billion years, and throughout that geologic history, we see evidence of volcanism, large volcanoes on Mars, large volcanic flows, some of which appear to be as recent as just a few million years. We also see these polar caps of Mars. The one in the North Polar region is a little over 2 kilometers thick and about 1,000 kilometers in diameter, about the size of the Greenland ice sheet. And the one in the South Polar region is roughly 1.5 to 2 times larger than the one in the north. And the surfaces of these two polar caps appear to be very active, quite young. The North Polar cap, much younger than the South Polar cap. The surface age of the North Polar cap is probably on the order of just a few thousand years and may continue to evolve during the present time as water is deposited and dust is deposited in the polar ice. The South Polar cap doesn't look quite as recently active and may have a surface that dates back hundreds of thousands to millions of years, but the deposits themselves, we think, actually go back perhaps even billions of years. There's evidence of paleopolar deposits associated with the South Polar cap that may date back as far as 3 billion years ago, when the layered deposits in the South Polar region could have been as much as twice as large as they are today. And we believe that the amount of internal heat the planet was radiating at that time due to the decay of naturally occurring radioactive materials in the crust may have been 2 to 3 times greater than it is today. So there seems to be a great deal of evidence that Mars, earlier in its history, the polar regions of Mars underwent extensive melting. And in fact, we've got photogeologic evidence that such melting occurred. We see, in association with the outskirts of these paleopolar deposits associated with the South Polar region, fluvial landforms that resemble terrestrial eskers. And these are the products of melting at the base of terrestrial temperate glaciers, where active melting carries sediments and transports it beyond the glacier, creating these deposits of sediments that are indicative of the outflow of large quantities of water from the base of the ice.
So if Mars once had a lot more water on the surface as either liquid water or as ice, what happened to it? Where did it go?
Well, in fact, we think there's pretty good evidence that early Mars, and I'm talking about the first billion, perhaps even the first 2 billion years of its geologic history, Mars had a northern ocean. The topography of Mars differs between the northern and southern hemispheres. The southern hemisphere averages about 4 kilometers higher in elevation than the northern hemisphere. In fact, the northern hemisphere is called the Northern Plains, and it occupies about a third of the planet's surface. And there is evidence of possible paleo shorelines around the northern plains that indicate the potential existence of an ocean that may have survived for hundreds of millions to billions of years in the northern plains of Mars. In fact, it may have disappeared and come back. One of the ways in which it may have come back is that we see evidence of large fluvial landforms near the equator at the boundary between the southern highlands and the northern plains. And these look like enormous rivers, 1,000 times larger than the largest river systems that exist on the Earth. And even though they're now dry, we see the dry riverbeds on Mars are as much as a kilometer deep, hundreds of kilometers wide, and as much as 1,000 kilometers long. And to produce that much erosion requires a tremendous volume of water. We see a number of these very large channels along the boundary between the southern highlands and the northern plains. And it's possible that an ocean which had existed on early Mars, when there was a climate change, that ocean froze. The ice ultimately sublimed away, got cold trapped at the poles. The poles may have become thick enough for melting to occur at the base of the ice sheet and reintroduce that water that was originally part of the oceans into the subsurface beneath a thick layer of frozen ground. And when you look at these fluvial landforms along the boundary between the southern and northern hemispheres, we see that they originate not from a gradual merging of smaller channels that might indicate that the rivers were formed from rainfall, but they come from huge areas of disrupted material that makes it look like the water just broke out from beneath the subsurface. And that, in fact, is what we think happened. We think the water was confined under a very thick layer of permafrost when the climate transitioned from a warm climate, perhaps very similar to the Earth's today, to a colder climate, much like the conditions we see on Mars today. There's a tremendous difference in atmospheric conditions between Earth and Mars right now. The average temperature at the equator on Mars is about minus 65 degrees Fahrenheit. At the polar regions, it's about minus 190 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's quite a difference in temperature, and that's due to the fact that Mars orbits at a distance that's about 50% greater from the sun than the Earth does. The atmospheric pressure is also much different now. The atmospheric pressure on Mars is less than 1% of what it is at sea level at the Earth, roughly equivalent to what the atmospheric pressure in the Earth's atmosphere is at an altitude of about 100,000 feet or wow, about 19 miles above the surface. At that pressure level, water exposed, liquid water exposed to the surface will begin to boil and freeze as it loses heat. And this is essentially what we think happened when these large river systems were formed on Mars. If they formed under present-day conditions, they would have flowed over enormous distances, but in the process, they would have been boiling and developing a thickening ice cover until finally the entire flow froze. And under current Martian conditions, that frozen water, that ice, would have then sublimed away and been cold trapped out at the Martian poles.
My guest is Steve Clifford. He's senior scientist at the Planetary Science Institute. We're talking to him today about the discovery of what looks like liquid water on Mars. We'll resume the conversation in a couple of minutes. If you've got a question, call us at 1-800-933-5372, email think@kera.org, or leave a question at Twitter. We're at @KERAThink. This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd, and today we're talking about the discovery of what looks like liquid water on Mars. My guest is Steve Clifford, senior scientist at the Planetary Science Institute. If you've got a question, you can call 1-800-933-5372. All right, Steve, if I'm following you, Mars today doesn't have much of an atmosphere, at least not much of an atmosphere that would compare to what we have on Earth. That has a lot to do with it having lost its water over time. Did Mars at one time have something comparable to the weather that we're familiar with on Earth?
Oh, yes. Mars undergoes periods of climate change even in the current epoch. And that is the result of the fact that the inclination of the Martian spin axis, which is 25 degrees, varies over time on a period of about 120,000 years. And it can vary from as little as an axial inclination of zero to an axial inclination of as much as 60 degrees or more. Under those conditions, the polar regions get very different amounts of solar heating. At the time when the spin axis is inclined to 60 degrees, temperatures can get very near the melting point. When the spin axis is down around 0 degrees, the temperature at the polar regions can be so cold that much of the atmosphere, the thin atmosphere that Mars has at the present time, will condense out at the poles. That's important because you need at least the current level of atmospheric pressure to have enough air to elevate dust on the Martian surface. Mars experiences enormous dust storms every now and then, some that can encircle the globe, and that dust often is transported into the polar regions as the seasonal cycle of condensation due to the colder temperatures at the poles causes some of the CO2 in the atmosphere to precipitate out in a formal layer that ranges from just a centimeter thick up to as much as several meters in the center of the poles. There's also substantial evidence that very early in the planet's history, Mars did have an atmosphere and did have a climate that was very similar to the Earth's. We see in the southern highlands, which are the older terrains on Mars, terrains that we believe date back about 4 billion years, that there are extensive networks of drainage features that look very much like they were formed by rainfall. They could have alternatively been formed by the deposition of snowpacks in the Martian highlands that eventually melted, and the water from that melting then carved these drainage patterns that we see. But roughly about 3.9, 3.7 billion years ago, there appears to have been a change in the climate of Mars that may have been due to the fact that the early solar wind was stripping away parts of the Martian atmosphere, and the temperatures were getting colder on the surface. So you had a decline in atmospheric pressure, a decline in temperature, ultimately resulting in the conditions that we observe on Mars today.
If we've known there was water ice on Mars for a decade now, what makes liquid water such a big deal to discover?
Well, liquid water is important for a variety of reasons. I think the one that captures the most attention is the fact that everywhere there's liquid water on the Earth, there's life. So the search for life on Mars has been intimately tied to looking for evidence where Liquid water has resided on the surface in the past, and looking for the for evidence of the presence of liquid water on Mars today. Over the past decade or so, there have been a number of observations which suggest that liquid water in recent times, and by recent, within a typical Martian year, there may be transient liquid water that trickles down slopes in the equatorial and temperate regions of Mars. And this evidence consists of images of dark linear features that propagate downslope during the spring. They continue through the summer, but towards the end of the summer, they begin to fade, as if the water that could be the mechanism by which these streaks forms is evaporating into the atmosphere. And they completely disappear in the fall and winter. Now, there are processes not involving water that have been suggested as a possible explanation for these features. But I think one of the more interesting possibilities is that they may result from the transient melting of near-surface ground ice or from the absorption of water from the Martian atmosphere.
So this subglacial lake that's been discovered has been described as possibly 12 miles across. I know Mars is a sizable planet, but can you explain why its existence wasn't obvious earlier?
Yeah, I think there's a basic philosophy in the analysis of the MARSIS radar data, and it goes back to something Carl Sagan once said, famous popularizer of science and astronomer back during the 1970s up through the 1990s. He said that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. And when you're talking about the identification of long-lived reservoirs of liquid water on Mars, you want to make sure you've got a pretty solid case. Mm. And I was actually part of the MARSIS team back in the time period of about 2005 to 2010 as a U.S. participating scientist. And during that time, there were observations that were made by the instrument of bright reflectors in the South Polar region. But for a variety of reasons, we didn't feel confident that we could interpret those as evidence of liquid water. The data that was looked at by the MARSIS team in this study looked at data that was obtained between 2012 and 2015. And based on their analysis of both the radar properties of this bright reflector and their thermal modeling of the Martian polar regions, they came up with the conclusion that the best explanation for this bright region was the presence of liquid water. I have some concerns about their thermal analysis. I think it might be a bit optimistic. We know that the surface temperature that they assumed is a little bit warmer than it actually is. The thermal conductivity of the polar ice may be a little bit higher than what they assumed. And there may not be the concentration of salts necessary to produce liquid water down at a temperature of minus 190 degrees Fahrenheit, which is what we think the temperatures may be at this location. However, in contrast to that, we also don't know a value of a very important variable, and that's the amount of internal heat that Mars is radiating. When you go out on a cold day and put on a thin jacket, your body still feels cool. You put on a thicker jacket, and you start to feel warmer. Well, basically, the same thing happens as you add ice to the Martian polar caps. The temperature at the base of those caps increases. And if the heat flow from the planet is high enough, you can reach the melting point. On Earth, there are a lot of geographic variations in the amount of heat that's radiated by the planet. So the amount of heat that may be radiated from the interior in Houston, Texas, is different than what's radiated up at Yellowstone National Park. Those kind of local variations in heat flow could well explain the occurrence of a liquid water reservoir at the shallow depth detected by the MARSIS team at this particular location, and may also explain why so far we've only identified one small area where this condition exists. However, the MARSIS team seems to be optimistic that there are other bright reflectors in their data that might well have an origin that's related to the presence of liquid water. And I think a lot still remains to be seen in terms of how other scientists in the radar community and the planetary community, what they think when they go back and take a look at this data, try and interpret it from their own perspectives. And, you know, a year from now, we may find that there are other explanations that are offered beyond just the presence of liquid water. On the other hand, we may also find that these additional investigations that happen anytime a new science result is published in the literature result in further support for the idea that this is liquid water. Fortunately, there will be another mission flown that includes a radar sounder in 2020. The Chinese are sending a polar orbiter to Mars, and that orbiter operates in a frequency range that's very close to what Marsis operates at. And if these bright reflectors hold up and are visible in the observations of that Chinese instrument, then I think it's going to provide additional support for the interpretation made by the Marsis team.
So most people who've spent any time in a kitchen know that the presence of salt can make ice melt faster and, of course, keep water from boiling quite as quickly, requiring a higher temperature for boiling. When you talk about temperatures of minus 190 degrees, I have to imagine, Steve, that's a lot of salt, way saltier, right, than any of the oceans or any of the places on Earth where life exists in salt water.
That's true, and I should correct that temperature figure. That's actually the temperature at the top of the ice cap.
Okay.
Now, because Mars has a thick ice cap, and we believe that the planet is radiating internal heat maybe a third as much on average as the Earth does, the temperature gets warmer the deeper you go down in the ice. And where the Marsis team has estimated that this liquid water reservoir may exist. We've got temperatures that are that could vary anywhere from just a few degrees below freezing if the heat flow is high, to maybe over 100 degrees below freezing if the temperature is very low.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. I want to go to the phones now. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. Alan is calling from Dallas. Hi, Alan.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go right ahead.
Okay, first I want to comment. I took a class under Dr. Clifford 30 years ago at U of H Clear Lake, so it's good to hear his voice again. Hmm. And, Tim, I was hoping he'd make a comment some about the presence of methane in Mars and its variation and the significance of that.
Thanks for your call.
Yes. Well, one of the major sources of methane on Earth is the decay of organic material. It's a product of life. It's also a respiration product from some organisms that can survive off of nothing but the presence of water and basaltic rock. And we know that on Mars, there's a tremendous amount of basaltic rock that we've been able to identify with the spectrometers and the various surface investigations that we've sent to Mars. And we have reason to believe, not only because of this potential detection of a basal lake on Mars in the polar regions, but also the presence of these large outflow channels that we see at the boundary between the northern and southern hemisphere, that a great deal of groundwater may exist on Mars. The estimates that have been made based on the amount of erosion that's associated with these outflow channels is that Mars may have a global inventory of water equivalent to a layer as much as half a kilometer to a full kilometer deep. So that deepest reservoir is about two-thirds of a mile deep. And since we don't see it on the surface, the expectation is that much of this exists as ground ice and groundwater in the deep subsurface. If you took all the water that we do see visible on the Martian surface in the form of ice, it would form a layer about 30 meters deep. So what we see in the polar ice caps is really just a small amount of the water that we think is stored in the subsurface on Mars. Now, if you've got that much water in the subsurface, and if the heat flow of the planet is anywhere near where we think it is, this roughly one-third the value on average of the amount of geothermal heat flow for the Earth, then there should be abundant liquid water in the form of groundwater beneath a very thick layer of permafrost. And there are organisms that exist on Earth that are perfectly happy in that kind of environment. And if early Mars developed life, and that life developed an ability to survive in the subsurface like terrestrial life does, then there's no reason that life couldn't have persisted on Mars for as long as any groundwater was available. And again, given the evidence that we appear to have with the MARSIS investigation of the South Polar Cap, it suggests that, in fact, conditions may be suitable for the existence of liquid water at depth.
If you were to receive incontrovertible evidence that life had existed, even in a microscopic form on Mars, and no longer existed, would that information make you happy or sad?
Oh, I think it'd still make us very, very happy, because it would demonstrate that the conditions on Earth are not unique, that life could potentially evolve anywhere. If it did evolve on Mars, then I think it increases the likelihood that we may detect it elsewhere in our own solar system. We know, for example, that the icy moons of the outer planets, moons like Europa and Ganymede and Triton and Titan, have oceans that are anywhere from 60 to 100 miles deep beneath several kilometers of an icy crust. And if we find life on Mars, I think it provides support for the idea that life may have also developed in these environments. It may be very difficult to access and very difficult to prove, but if we found life on more than one other planetary body in the solar system, I think the implications for understanding the prevalence of life in our galaxy and throughout the universe, I think, are enormous.
Steve Clifford is my guest. He's senior scientist at the Planetary Science Institute. We're talking about the implications of the discovery of what appears to be liquid water on Mars. You can join this conversation. We have lines open at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Steve Clifford of the Planetary Science Institute about the implications of the discovery of liquid water on Mars. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. And back to the phones we go now for a question from William in Dallas. Hi, William.
Hello. Dr. Clifford, I was a caver years and years ago, and I still kind of keep an eye on the field. And I noticed that they've got photographic evidence of sinkholes on the moon and possibly sinkhole on Mars, which would indicate some kind of underground cavity. And I'm wondering if this would indicate underground circulation of water as it does on Earth, or would these merely be lava tubes? And even so, would there be possibility of water down there?
Thanks for calling.
Yes, I think what have been observed on both the moon and Mars are probably best explained as lava tubes created when lava is flowing down a local slope. The lava near the surface starts to cool and solidify, But the lava inside the flow is still hot and continues to flow until it drains out of that tube. And as time goes on, meteorite impacts, earthquakes, any number of things can disrupt that shell of rock created by the lava flow and cause it to collapse. So I think most of these features that have been seen, certainly on the moon and in terms of most of the ones that have been seen on Mars, are really attributed to volcanism. However, there is evidence of groundwater flow on Mars, in terms of the existence of these large outflow channels, dry outflow channels on the planet. There also seems to be some evidence that liquid water may have been discharged from shallow depths elsewhere where there were volcano ice interactions. If you've got a very cold Martian surface where ice exists in the ground, then any kind of magmatic activity, any kind of volcanism that occurs can result in the melting of that ice. And we do definitely see examples that indicate that that kind of process has occurred on Mars as recently as the past 100 million years or so.
What would it take for us to know for sure the characteristics of that liquid water, like what chemicals are dissolved in it, how muddy it might be, the temperature, that sort of thing?
Well, in terms of this lake that has been tentatively identified in the South Polar region, a kind of investigation you could conduct would be to land a device known as a Pilbirth probe. This is a probe that can actually melt its way through the ice, and that's better than bringing the drill that you would need to the drill pipe that you would need to drill through a mile of polar ice, much easier to melt. Excuse me. And this probe could carry instruments that could confirm the presence of liquid water, and also could conduct experiments to look for evidence, molecular evidence of possible native Martian life.
You just noted that the water has been tentatively identified. We should note here that this is not the first time scientists have believed they had evidence for water flowing on Mars in the present day. What's different about the data from Marsis? And if it's not liquid water, what else could it be, like frozen CO2? Or what other substance could it be besides water?
It doesn't appear to be frozen CO2. I think the Marsis team did a very good job of looking at what they thought the most obvious alternative explanations might be for this bright reflector. And based on their analysis, they really do believe that liquid water provides the best explanation. But when you publish something like that, it's introduced into the larger radar and planetary community, and other people have a chance to look at the data, look at the analysis, and look at it with a slightly different perspective and with maybe a little bit more active imagination. They may see something in the data that they can explain these reflections as being something other than liquid water. So there's still a lot of work that's got to be done, but this is, I think the Marsis team has presented a very persuasive case.
What could we do with a manned mission to Mars? What could we learn that can't possibly be done with even the most sophisticated unmanned orbiters or terrestrial probes?
Well, any kind of probe we sent to Mars has to have within its programming or its ability to be reprogrammed the ability to conduct a wide variety of investigations. And that calls for very, very complicated and very expensive spacecraft. Human beings have an ability to reprogram themselves, get ideas, and think of new ways of doing things on the spur of the moment. And I think that that's one of the tremendous benefits of having humans involved in exploration. I think it also provides a tremendous boost to the imagination, encouragement for students to pursue science. So I think there are a large number of reasons to support the idea of the human exploration of space and hopefully of Mars. But There is still a lot we can do with our robotic investigations. There are samples we'd like to return from the surface of the planet. There are more sophisticated radar studies that we'd like to do. Your listeners may have heard of some radar studies that have been done on the Earth, where shuttle radar was used to image the subsurface of the Saharan Desert, and drainage channels were found in some of the driest areas of the Sahara that date back tens of thousands of years, when the climate in the Sahara was much different. These same kind of investigations have yet to be made on Mars, and they offer the potential for really expanding our understanding of the planet, the kind of climate change it's experienced, and the geology, the nature of the subsurface. There are seismic investigations of Mars. The next spacecraft that NASA is going to send to Mars is going to fly to Mars and land in the coming year. It's called InSight, and it includes a seismometer that's going to give us our first real understanding of the deep interior of Mars, its core and mantle, the frequency of earthquakes on Mars, and meteorite impacts. So if we set down additional, if we send additional missions to Mars, including things like a seismic network, a deep electromagnetic sounding network, a meteorological network that looks at measurements of atmospheric wind speeds and temperature all over the planet. These have an ability to vastly increase our knowledge of Mars prior to sending humans, and I think establish the understanding of the environment on Mars that's going to make human exploration ultimately possible.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. We have Max on the line in Prairie Land. Hi, Max.
Hello. I haven't talked this morning, so my vocal cords aren't greased as well as they should be.
It's okay.
So bear with me. I invested 40 years of my life at the Manned Spacecraft Center, later to become LBJ Space Center. And I've come to the conclusion that space exploration involving humans needs to continue. But first, we have to determine how to support human life, animal life, plant life in space away from the Earth, because we simply cannot haul the air, oxygen, nitrogen to breathe while we're exploring space. Has the doctor given this any thought?
Thanks for your call, Max.
Yes, and in fact, NASA has given it a great deal of thought, and many people in the community have. I think it's clear that it would be prohibitively expensive to carry the water and the oxygen we need to have a human presence on Mars for any length of time. So you want to be able to tap any natural resources. Well, we know that there's water ice on Mars. We see it in the polar caps. We see water vapor in the Martian atmosphere with spectrometers that we've sent to Mars. And we see abundant evidence for the presence of shallow ground ice on Mars that could be mined by future human explorers to obtain liquid water and also break down that water into hydrogen and oxygen that could be used as propellant to send the astronauts back to the Earth. So there are a lot of studies that have been and are continuing to be done regarding the potential use of in situ resources on Mars for sustaining future human missions. I think another issue is when we go to Mars, and what we do before we go to Mars. The U.S. hasn't sent astronauts onto a planetary surface since the mid-1970s with the Apollo program. And I think before we send astronauts on a very expensive mission to go to Mars, I think it's important to first test some of our technologies, some of our procedures, and send astronauts back to the moon. The moon is a much more affordable place to go and to do our testing. Anybody who's seen The Martian knows what's involved. If there's a mistake that happens on Mars that endangers our astronauts, much better to make those mistakes when the astronauts are only 3 or 4 days away from potential rescue from the Earth.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Sorry, please continue.
Oh, no. And the other thing is that the actual experience of building habitats in a planetary environment, operations in terms of having astronauts going out on the surface, coming back into the habitat, the potentials for dust contamination. We know, for example, that there are substances on Mars, perchlorates, that are present in potentially lethal concentrations if they're inhaled by astronauts on the surface. Perchlorates also turn out to be very potent freezing point depressing salts and are of the type of salt that was discussed by the MARSIS team in allowing liquid water to survive so close to the surface of the South Polar Cap. So there are hazards in the environment that we need to learn more about with regard to Mars, and additional experience we need to gain, I think, by sending astronauts back to the moon.
So, Steve, if the MARSIS discovery of liquid water on the Red Planet is confirmed, what does that suggest for the direction of future ongoing Mars research? Where do we go from there?
Well, I think it'd be interesting to do a very, very thorough study of both the North and South Polar Caps with an advanced radar sounder. Again, the Chinese are going to be sending one in 2020, but we now have the ability to build a superior radar sounder to MARSIS, to the Sherrod radar sounder that was sent by NASA to Mars in 2006, and do focused studies of the North and South Polar regions. That would help us identify whether this particular subsurface reservoir of water that has tentatively been identified by the MARSIS team is truly a reservoir of water, and whether there are similar bodies elsewhere in both the North and South Polar layer deposits. In addition to that, we can conduct studies elsewhere on the planet that can tell us whether or not persistent liquid water is present deep below the surface at temperate and equatorial latitudes, where liquid water may survive under kilometer thicknesses of frozen ground. So I think the application of geophysical techniques like seismic techniques and electromagnetic techniques can serve an important role in improving our understanding of just how large the potential region of habitability is within the Martian subsurface. And of course, we shouldn't lose sight of our investigations of the surface either. Right now, we have the Curiosity rover that is investigating Gale Crater, this 100-kilometer diameter crater near the equator of Mars that the rover has provided evidence which suggests was once hosted a large lake that may have survived for hundreds of millions of years.
Wow.
And that may well have been a habitable environment that we find fossil evidence of life from.
Steve Clifford is a senior scientist at the Planetary Science Institute. He specializes in the study of water on Mars. Steve, thank you so much for making time to speak with us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker. We had Alan Roberts running the board for us today. Samantha Guzman is associate producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can find the podcast at think.kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.